And the dentist was smiling. He says, I'm so excited. And the uncle says, I don't understand. Don't you think I'm nuts or something? Aren't you laughing at me? He says, are you kidding? Now I see where the Jewish people are, and now I see what your belief in Hashem is. Now I understand why the Jews are special. Why? A rabbi told me to go to a dentist. Isn't that ridiculous? The dentist says, do you know who is my next patient after you? Do you know who has an appointment today? Exactly in about 5 minutes? The judge of the court. Not only he's my patient, he's my good friend for many years. I'm taking care of his teeth. I'm taking care of his wife's teeth and his children's teeth. And we're good friends for many years. I think that I'm just the one that can help you. And I think your rabbi must be very holy to know that. Because I never met your rabbi, he never met me, but he sent you to the right place. And Yankel couldn't believe his ears. You mean there's hope for me? The dentist says, not only there's hope for you, I think you're going to see something wonderful happen. Go into the next room, close the door, but listen to what I'm going to say to the judge, and I think everything is going to be okay. And your uncle goes into the next room, closes the door, everybody's listening by the door, and all of a sudden, the judge comes into the dentist's room, and the judge sits down in a chair, and the dentist puts on the bib, and he starts to work on the judge and do everything that he has to do. And he says to the judge, no judge, how are you today? Oh, okay. What's going on in the court? The judge says, you know that's a secret. I'm not allowed to tell you. The dentist says, come on, we're friends for so many years. I'm not going to tell anybody. What's going on today? Something interesting happening today in the court? Oh, the judge says, there's a Jew who's stealing money from the king. He sent him a bag of rocks instead of money. Can you believe it? He stole all the money and he took it for himself. And he's blaming it on his workers. And we have the books. And we have the workers that are going to talk about what they saw. And it looks like this Jew is heading for Siberia, for the North Pole, probably for 25, if not 50 years. Oh, yeah? What kind of a business is it? What kind of a factory is it? And the judge says what it is. Oh, you know, the dentist says, you know, I have a friend of our family, a Jewish man, and he also has a business in that same town, also such a factory, and his name is Yankel. Yankel, whatever his last name was. The judge says, hey, that's the same man that's going today to the trial. That's exactly the same man. You mean you know him? The dentist says, do I know him? For many years, a fine, honest man. He would not steal a penny from anyone. He's very, very careful because he's a religious man. He's careful not to do anything wrong. Judge, I think that Yankel would never do such a thing. He would be very careful. And it seems to me, anyway, who am I? Only a dentist, but I am your friend, that if you look carefully at those books, they have been changed and they have been tricked around with. If you look very closely at the handwriting. And also, if you look into the workers, I think the workers must have made a very bad trick on Yankel. Maybe they're jealous, they wanted to steal the money, they knew that it was easy to blame a Jew on it, he'll get in trouble. And I think that Yankel, because I know him, is a very fine man, would never do such a thing. The judge says, listen, I'm very glad you told me this, and I'm going to look in to making very, very tricky questions on the workers. But remember, keep this a secret, because no one's allowed to tell what goes on in the court, and you're not allowed to find out. So between you and me, this is a secret, right? Yes. Right, judge? Okay. He finished with his mouth and he took off the bib, and now the judge leaves for the court. And Yankel goes out and he says, thank you so much. And the dentist says, yes, you should thank your rabbi and thank God, because now you see what a special rabbi this is. And Yankel goes to the court And it's full of people. The families of the workers are there. And Yanko comes in. They all go, boo, send it your way. Stole money from the king. Boo. And Yanko looked around and he sees so many people against him. And now the judge comes in, the same judge that was in the dentist office. And now he calls the witnesses, the workers, to the judge's stand. And the workers start saying how they saw Yankel and he was stealing the money and he put in rocks to make a trick. And he was writing in the books that he paid the king. And everybody says, yeah, they're telling the truth. Send him to Siberia. Get rid of the Jew. And now the judge says, okay, Yankel, you come up and you tell your side of the thing. And everybody says, boo. And every time he says anything, they say, boo. And he gets done saying his side. And now it's time for the judge to decide. And the judge says, okay, I'm calling the workers back to come up once again. What? What? We already said what we have to say. No, but I'm not done asking my questions. And the judge gets up and he starts to go in front of them and he walks back and forth asking one question after another question after another question. And the workers are scratching their heads and they're schwitzing and they're nervous. And the judge was very smart and he knows how to ask questions in just the right way. And they start making all kinds of mistakes. And they start saying all kinds of things what they didn't say before and saying the wrong things. And after a while, everybody saw they're a bunch of liars and cheaters. And the judge had them write things. And he took the books and he saw it was their handwriting in the book. And they tried to copy his handwriting. And they made all kinds of tricks. And they found it out. And the judge gets up and he says, the workers are going to Siberia for 50 years. And Yankel goes home free to his family. Yeah. And that's the end of the Maise. There was a very rich goy. Big, beautiful house. A nice yard. And this goy was very proud of something that was in his yard that he used to like to go out and look at a few times a day, show his friends. And that was a sundial. What is a sundial? A sundial is a kind of a clock. In those days, they didn't have watches. They didn't have so many clocks like we have nowadays. Could be there were a few clocks, maybe a very few clocks, because that was in the beginning when people were using clocks and things like that, like machines. There weren't so many machines around then, very few. But there is a way to tell the time by putting a thing in your backyard or outside, and you make it a special way with different pieces of metal, and the sun has to shine exactly in certain ways. Of course, you have to make this thing a very exact way. Only certain people know how to do it. You have to be very careful. And if you look at the shadow, because when the metal sticks up and the sun shines and makes a shadow, there's different ways that the shadow goes and it tells the time. You can look at it, and in the daytime you can tell what time it is. Of course, at nighttime, will you know what time it is? Yes or no? No, of course not, because it's a sundial only when the sun is shining. At night, the sun is not shining, so everything is a shadow. You can't tell. And this guy was very proud. He was the only one in the whole town, the only one for miles around that had a sundial. And everybody else in the town, if you ask them what time it is, they could tell you, well, it's the morning, or it's the afternoon, or it's near the evening. Exactly what time it is? I don't know. I don't have a clock. I don't know what time it is. But he would always know what time it is. He goes out in his backyard. He could tell you if it's 9:30 in the morning or 10:15 in the morning or 1:45 or 3:28 or whatever. Maybe you couldn't get that close, but it can get very close to know exactly what time it is. He was very proud of this sundial. His friends would come over just to look at it. Now, one day, it was the morning, the guy went out in his backyard, and he wants to see what time it is. He figures it must be around 9, maybe the latest 10 o'clock in the morning. He looks at the sundial. All of a sudden, he sees 3. 3? It's not 3 in the afternoon. That's for sure not. It's the morning. Maybe there's something wrong. He checks the metal pieces. No, they did not move. Only the sun is moving in the sky. So there wasn't anything that slipped out of place. Why is the shadow saying 3? Very strange. Everything is exactly the way it was yesterday, the day before, last week, and last month. Well, who knows? I'm going to go back inside. He waited about an hour. It's about 10 o'clock, maybe 11 o'clock, the latest. It's still not the afternoon, because the sun was not shining directly overhead. And he goes out and looks at the sundial. Again, it's an hour later. All of a sudden, it says 7:30. What? 7:30? It's not 7:30. It's not in the evening, and it's not early in the morning. And how in 1 hour did it move 4.5 hours? Wait a minute. Something is fishy. Something is strange with my sundial. What's going on over here? And each time he went out from then on to look at the sundial, something was really wrong. He would wait an hour, and it would say some funny time. 2, 7, 9. And this happened every day afterwards. He couldn't figure out what's wrong. Did somebody bend something? Maybe a rock hit it? No, he couldn't see anything wrong. This guy decided that somebody has to be called in to investigate, to see what's wrong, to figure out the problem. Well, he knew a professor, a big teacher in a university where older people go to learn things. And he says, this professor, this teacher must be a very smart man because he's always studying books and he's teaching books. Probably he knows a lot of things. Let him come over and figure it out. He called the professor from the university who lived a few streets away, and he asked him to come to his yard to look at the sundial. And the professor came over, a very important looking man, a very smart man, and he looks around and he brought a few books about sundials and things like that that he had in the library, and he looks up things. And he looks at the sundial, and he looks at the sun and the sky, and he scratches his head about 5 times, and he says, I can't figure it out. Why the sundial should say these funny numbers? Let's call someone else. Let's both of us call someone else. Who is very smart in the town? Well, there was a doctor. Let's call the doctor. He went to school a long time. He learned a lot of things. Probably he knows a lot of smart things. And they called the doctor to make a house call. The doctor came with his doctor bag. Who's sick? In the backyard. Oh, your child fell down in the backyard? No, it's my sundial. My sundial is sick. His numbers are all mixed up. And the doctor came out and looked at the sundial. He didn't take out his little thing and poke them in the stomach. He just took, he left his doctor bag on the bench and he looked at the sundial. And the doctor tried also to figure out what's wrong with the sundial, why the numbers are all fishy. And the doctor scratched his head a few times and he says, I can't figure it out. I don't know what's wrong with this sundial. It's very strange. Well, who should we call then? The doctor was there, the professor was there, and the guy who owned the sundial was there. Let's call the mayor, the leader of the town. He must be a very smart man. He's the leader of the whole town. Let's call him over. And the mayor came over with his secretaries and a few of his officers, and each one of them tried to figure out what's wrong with the sundial, and nobody could do it. And they're talking and they're talking. And because there was a big crowd in the backyard, anybody who walked down the street and saw in the backyard the big crowd, they also came knocking on the door saying, what's wrong? They thought maybe something is wrong here. Until a whole big crowd, many people of the neighborhood, were all in the backyard, everybody scratching his head, trying to figure out what's wrong with the sundial. As everybody was racking their brains, trying to figure out the problem, all of a sudden, one of the people said, let's call one of the Jews from the other side of the neighborhood, the Jewish neighborhood. Somebody said, a Jew? What does a Jew know about a sundial? After all, they're always in shul, and they're learning these big books with this funny writing. They don't know anything about sundials. And the man said, I heard that these Jews are very smart, and some of them know about everything because they learned the Torah. And the Torah talks about everything. The Gemara, the Talmud, you could find every kind of smart thing in there. Let's call a rabbi. And there broke out a big argument if they should invite a Jew or not, because some of them didn't like Jews. And some of them felt maybe they'll be jealous if a Jew could figure out the sundial, and they couldn't. A rabbi who sits in the shul and davens and learns Torah with a beard and with the strings coming out of his pants, or wears these black boxes on his head that they all think are so strange, how could he figure out something they couldn't figure out? But finally they decided, they can't figure it out. Let's see if they call the rabbi, what's going to happen. And some of them said, there's a very old rabbi with a gray and white beard, and he must be the head of the Jewish neighborhood. Why don't you go and call him? And the professor and the doctor figured, if this old rabbi will come, they'll feel okay, because probably he won't be able to figure out anything. And they're not going to be jealous if he scratches his head, and maybe his beard also, and can't figure out just like them. And in fact, it might show that the rabbi is not so smart, so they're not going to feel so bad afterwards, after all. Okay, call the Jew. Some of the goyim went to call the rabbi. And the rest of the crowd was waiting to see what's going to happen. The few goyim that went to the shul, they got there, and all of a sudden the yidden in the shul saw these goyim there, and they went to find out what's going on, and the goyim explained why they're there, and they asked for the rav. The yidden were afraid maybe if the rav would not go or something, there might be some kind of trouble. So they went to the rav and they explained what's happening, and what does the rav want to do about it? And the Rav smiled, and he says, there's a bacher who's learning in the shul, and his name is Shneur Zalman. He's a young boy, but he's very smart. Instead of me going, let little Shneur Zalman go, and I'm sure that he'll take care of it. Now, this is when the Alter Rebbe was a little boy. But when the Alter Rebbe was a little boy, he was very, very smart. And he knew a lot of things. And so they went, they brought the Alter Rebbe to these people that he should go to the yard. All of a sudden, the goyim, they couldn't believe it. We're taking a boy, a kid? They felt so funny. In the yard is standing the most important, smartest people in the whole town. The doctor, the mayor, important, smart people, the professor, all of a sudden the Jewish boy, he's going to go? Ha. Oh, we're going to have a good laugh over there. First of all, we're going to have a good laugh that the Jews pick a kid to go. And second of all, we're going to have a good laugh to see a kid try to figure out what the professor and the doctor and the mayor and all the important people can't figure out. Oh, this is going to be a funny thing. And the Alter Rebbe was walking to the other part of the town. And all of a sudden, they go into the yard. And the goyim standing there said, "Where is the rabbi? Where is the rabbi with the gray and white beard?" And the ones who went to the shul said, "This is who the Jews sent us, a kid. Isn't that funny? We thought the Jews were so smart. They sent a kid." Oh. Some of the goyim were burning mad. What kind of a thing? They send us a kid? And others laugh. Let's have a good laugh. Let's have a good joke. And the Alter Rebbe, little Schneur Zalmany, he goes over to the sundial. He takes a look. And all of a sudden, he starts looking around in the sky. And the goyim say, "What's the kid looking around in the sky for? What's going on over here?" And the Alter Rebbe says, after thinking for about a half a minute, he says, "Over there, down the road, if you go about 5 miles, there's a hill, a small mountain. On top of that small mountain are trees. The tops of the trees are full of branches and leaves that have been growing there and have gotten now very, very tall. The way the sun shines at certain times of the day, it bounces off that hill and bounces off those trees. And because the leaves got so big and the branches got so big, it's messing up the sundial here. So you have to go and trim those branches off, cut those branches off and those leaves. And if you do that, the sundial will work perfectly." The goyim looked at each other. Could it be that this kid figured it out in half a minute when everybody else scratched their heads and couldn't figure it out? Or maybe he's saying, a whole maysa doesn't even sound right. 5 miles down the road, a hill. How does he know anything? He's a little kid. Well, they said, "We have to try. We have no, you know, we have to try, we have no choice, we might as well try that instead of just laughing at it." And they brought a wagon, and the professor wanted to go, and of course the guy who owned the sundial wanted to go, the doctor wanted to go, the mayor wanted to go, and everybody else wanted to go, so they brought their wagons. And they even brought some men with tools to cut down branches in case they find out that it's right. And most of the goyim of the whole town, all of a sudden, were going in their wagons down the road, traveling about 5 miles. All of a sudden, they came to a hill. They came to a small mountain. They look at the top. They see, sure enough, there's big trees and big branches and leaves. They climbed up the hill. They climbed up the trees. And they said, "This kid better be right to make us schlep all the way over here, 5 miles to a mountain and climb up trees and start cutting down branches. This better be the right thing, or else we're going to be very upset that we came all the way out here for nothing." They trimmed the leaves and the branches, and they came back just in time to see what time it was before the sun was going down. And sure enough, it said 6 o'clock, which was about the time the sun was going down in that time. And in the morning, the goy came out when he thought it was around 9 o'clock, and it said 9 o'clock. And an hour later, it said 10 o'clock. And a half hour later, it said 10:30. And from that time on, the sundial was working perfectly. And all the people saw that even when the Alter Rebbe was a little kid, he was so smart. Not only in the main thing, which is, of course, Torah, but because he learned Torah, and he learned Gemara, and he learned Mishnah, and he learned Chumash, and everything, it also makes you smart to figure out all kinds of other things. And everybody saw when the Alter Rebbe was even a young boy, he was very smart because he learned Torah. The Alter Rebbe was once walking in the field, and he saw a goyish shepherd taking care of the Shepselach. He was sitting on a rock, And those shepherds spent the whole day out in the field with the sheep. What would they do the whole day? Of course, they have to look after the sheep. But then they have a lot of extra time. So many of them had a little flute, and they played the flute. If somebody didn't have a flute, he would sing. And they would be out in the field singing, playing the flute. And sometimes they had very special songs. And one time the Alter Rebbe was walking in the field, and he wanted to listen to see what is the shepherd singing out in the field while he's watching his sheep. And the Alter Rebbe listened to one of the shepherds, and he sang a very special, beautiful song. And it wasn't just a song, it was a nigun. The Alter Rebbe could recognize that it was a nigun, a Yiddish nigun. And not only a Yiddish nigun, but the Alter Rebbe with Ruach HaKodesh recognized that this was a nigun they used to sing in the Beis HaMikdash. They sang this nigun exactly that way in the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Aye, how did it get to a Goyish shepherd out in the fields? And how come the Alter Rebbe never heard of it before? Because through Golis, and through the Yidden having to go away from Eretz Yisrael, over the years, somehow, the Nigun also went into Golis. And the Yidden forgot it, and somehow this Goy knew about it. Well, the Alter Rebbe wanted to return this Nigun back to Kedusha, back to where it came from, that the Yidden should have it. And he walked over to the Goy, and he says, "That was a very beautiful song. I would like to buy the song from you." The guy says, "What do you mean, buy it from me? How do you buy a song?" "I'll teach it to you." But the Alter Rebbe said, "Not for free. I'm going to pay you 10 rubles, like $10. I want to pay you for the song." Well, the guy said, "I don't really understand that you want to buy the song. I'll teach it to you." The Alter Rebbe said, "But only if you let me pay you 10 rubles." "Well, okay, I could use 10 rubles. And the Goy started teaching the Alter Rebbe the song. And the Goy went on to teach the Alter Rebbe the whole Nigun, the whole song. The Alter Rebbe, of course, learned it. He paid very close attention. And now the Alter Rebbe paid the Goy the 10 rubles. And the Alter Rebbe walks away. And the Goy thinks to himself, "That's very strange that this rabbi with the long white beard should come to me and say he wants to buy a song. Who ever heard of it? Well, I'm going back to my rock. I'm going to go back and take care of my shepselach and sing this song." And he sits back on his rock and he starts to sing. Hey, wait a minute. I forgot the song. Wait a minute. The song I just taught that rabbi, I forgot how it goes. And Kinelach, he forgot it. He forgot everything. He completely forgot it. He was never able to sing it again. And only who got it? The Alter Rebbe. And he taught us the Nigun, which is called the Nigun of the Dalet Bavois. It's got four parts to it. Like Hashem's name has four letters, there's four parts to this Nigun. Now, we're not going to sing that. I'm going to teach you a different Nigun. Here's the Alter Rebbe. Okay.